Good morning. My name is Bill Kladke, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Ms. Marisa Gomez, who is the author of a very interesting book about East Baltimore. And Marisa's here today to tell us about the book and about East Baltimore and various things that we can do to help our communities. So, Maricela, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you this Saturday morning. First of all, for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar, could you please tell us about yourself?
Sure. So as you mentioned, my name is Maricela Gomez, and I've been in the Baltimore City area for now maybe about 23 years. Yeah, that would be about it. And let's see, what else about me? I came to the city to go to Johns Hopkins for training in medical school and graduate school and residency. And in the process of doing that, became very involved in the community surrounding the medical campus, the East Baltimore community, fondly known as the Middle East Baltimore community to many. And in the process of becoming involved and living there for a while, became actively involved in organizing and activism in housing and health issues. And out of that, it resulted in me becoming an organizer with several community organizations and starting a couple nonprofits and participating and starting a couple nonprofits in the community to look at how to address the issue of housing and health, and how people can become more involved and participatory in what's happening in their community and not just be being told what should happen in their community, which is historically what is done and currently what is done.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, it's amazing how all those things work together. They're symbiotic, aren't they? I mean, health is so much a part of what the existing economic health is of the community.
Yeah, one can look at it as my specialty is preventive medicine and public health, and one of the things that I like to focus on is the social determinants of health, because if you do that, then you look at all the factors that determines your health. So we're used to thinking traditionally that biological illness is what makes us not healthy, such as diseases that we inherit, or some infection that we get. But what we know now is really more than 70% of the reasons for our illnesses, for our health, stems from social factors, meaning factors like where we live. The place where we live matters in determining our health. The race of us, the ethnicity of us, the gender of us, whether we were born in this country, our sexual orientation, what spirituality or religion we decide to follow, all these things, the income, the amount of education we have, all these factors determine how healthy we are going to be or how healthy we're not going to be. The circumstances we face during childbirth, the circumstances a mother faces during pregnancy, whether or not we have access to good food, whether or not we have access to places we can exercise so we can stay healthy. These are things that now we're paying more attention to as a society, because now we see that, as I said, more than 80% of the time, these are the factors that will determine whether or not we're going to have a healthy life or whether we're going to have diabetes or high blood pressure or depression or anxiety or become addicted to drugs or die earlier. And we have some communities in Baltimore as the Equity Matters group, a part of the Place Matters organization out of D.C. showed that some neighborhoods in Baltimore have a life expectancy that are different from 10 years apart, meaning one community is expected to die when they're in their 60s, and another is expected to die when they're in their 70s and upper 70s. And what determines that? Well, race and class. It so happens to be race and class is the factor, are the factors that distinguish those two communities. But this is not just in Baltimore. Yeah. This is everywhere. This is in the across the world, to the extent that the World Health Organization has determined that poverty is the greatest determinant of health. And until we can address poverty, we really are just playing around, really, with the other indicators, and we really need to get at that. We know race runs very close with poverty, mm-hmm. meaning that what co-occurs with poverty often is people who are of color. People who are low income tend to be of color. And so because we know that, especially in this country, really, and across the world, we need to pay a much more attention to how race and class matters in determining our health, how race and class matters in determining where we live, how race and class matters in determining what school we have access to, how race and class matters in determining whether we're going to get that job or whether we're going to be passed up for someone else who mm-hmm. comes from a different class or has a little bit of a lighter skin or has access to people who come from a different class. So these are all things that we don't typically think about when we think about someone's health.
Right.
However, we're needing to spend a little bit more time engaged in looking at that more deeply. What are the social factors that determine a person's health or a population's health? And one of those factors happens to be community building. How do we rebuild communities, and how does that determine the health of people who live there and also the place that yeah. people are living?
And that's primarily the subject of your book, which is entitled Race, Class, Power, and Organizing in East Baltimore, Rebuilding Abandoned Communities in America. Mm. The book really comes out of your interests and frankly, you're just keeping your eyes open, being a Baltimore resident, seeing the collision of those things.
That's a really accurate description. What you just said is it was hard not to see
all these things
manifesting around one. Really, one has to be blind, I feel, in this society to not live in it.
Willfully blind.
Willfully neglectful. Some people say, well, we're just used to it. So it's become benign neglect. We could use that word as well, but just walking through the city from one neighborhood to another, it's really difficult for me to understand why there are not more people up in arms or clamoring at City Hall or writing letters to the mayor and the governor and demanding that we do more for our city.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, all you have to do is walk down 28th Street.
That's right.
Start at 28th Street and just walk over from the Hopkins area down over to Greenmount.
That's right.
And you go through, about three or four classes of buildings, and the clothes that people are wearing change, and the how upright they're walking and how healthy they look changes.
That's right.
As you walk down that street.
That's right. And how much I think it's interesting you say how upright they're walking. Because when a person is faced with less stress in their lives, they have less weight to carry, literally less weight to be burdened with on their shoulders, and not to mention what we don't see inside of them, what's going on in their mind and their heart.
Yeah.
And so as you do move through neighborhoods that are more affluent and less affluent, the people do carry a different burden because they're faced with different stress. You know, one person waking up one day in a low-income community of color has to deal with all the issues of how they're going to feed their children that day, whether or not the child gets enough food so they can be attentive at school, if they get to school on time, if everything is in order for that to happen, whether there's child care, getting to work on time. It's different for a family in a community where it's upper middle-income, wealthy community. These are some of the factors that don't become a daily stress. There are other stressors,
right.
of course.
Right.
I'm not saying there are not other stressors, but the additional stressors that people of poverty face in places of living in places of poverty, walking around a neighborhood where 80% or 60 or 70% of the homes are abandoned or in bad repair, where the infrastructure and the streets have been allowed to deteriorate. And I say intentionally allowed to deteriorate, which is one of the things that the book really focuses on,
right.
is for us to start taking away this blaming of the people who live in communities that have been disinvested over years and start looking at the policies and the law, the systems, the infrastructure, the structural systems that have been in place for more than 100 years in this country.
Back in 1972, William Ryan, a sociologist from Boston College, wrote a book called Blaming the Victim.
That's right.
And he's talking exactly about what you're talking about, which is that we are, in terms of health, we say that it's the individual's fault. It's either their genes or it's their personal choices. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter about your genes and personal choices if you don't have enough money to buy the best foods for you.
That's right.
The correct medicines and to get the proper exercise, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right. The choices we make are influenced by the surroundings and what access we have. So this book really called Race, Class, Power, and Organizing in East Baltimore, Rebuilding Abandoned Communities in America. What it does is it takes as a case study, if you will, the community of Middle East Baltimore, which, as I said, it's a community surrounding the Johns Hopkins Medical Institutions. And it takes a long lens and looks at the history of this community around Hopkins for the past 100 years and how the community building process has been influenced and not influenced by the city and state and federal dollars, and this very powerful and prestigious institution that lives there. And what I discovered in my research was that there's been several big projects that the institution, the Hopkins Institution, has used to expand itself, community building projects. And there's one now, and there was one in the 50s called the Broadway Redevelopment Project. And so what I do is I look at how back in the 50s and today with an 88-acre project of expanding now, there was the same process of removing the residents, more than 800 households, so that the institution could expand themselves. And what one has to ask is, well, why is that? How is that possible in America, right? Maybe in the 50s it was okay because supposedly at that time a prestigious white institution with the support of the city and state government, which is predominantly white and upper middle class and wealthy, who have been supported and have access to those positions because of their race and their class. At that time, supposedly it's okay, but now it's 2000, right? It's 2000. This project started in 2001. Why is it that we're repeating the same history?
Right.
Why is it that we can come and do the same thing that everyone turned, as we said, a blind eye, a benign neglect in the 50s? Why is it that we're doing that again in 2001, which is when this project started? So the book really takes into question and looks more deeply into why is that? What is the history of the laws and policies that have led to this neglect of our communities, a disinvestment in our schools, disinvestment in our churches, a disinvestment in the housing and the infrastructure in certain communities, those communities being, again, communities of color and low income, and a reverse of investment and support by city, state, federal dollars and laws.
And I think we need to cut you off there because we're about out of time, Maricela. And the way that at least we can find out something about that is by reading your book.
Yes.
Race, Class, Power, and Organizing in East Baltimore. And I saw it's available on Amazon.
It's available on Amazon. And
in your local bookstore?
It's available in your local bookstore. It's also available on the website. If you go to my website, which is Maricela B. Gomez, that's MARISELAB, as in Burns, GOMEZ.com. It's actually uploaded, and you can have access to it for free if you want to read it. You can also get it for a lesser price directly from the publisher. If you call the publisher, who is Lexington Books, and mention this code, LEX20AUTH12. If you mention that code, you'll get a 20% discount on the sale of the book. I will also have that information. I'll post it onto my website, and I'll post it onto the Facebook page of the book. You can find it on Facebook under the name of the book, which is Race, Class, Power, and Organizing in East Baltimore.
Wonderful.
There's an event coming up on August 10th at 3 p.m., a bus and book tour of East Baltimore that basically will take a tour through the neighborhoods that the book writes about, mm-hmm. Or the book talks about. The tour begins at 3200 Dillon Street in Canton at the United Evangelical Church of Christ. Again, it's August 10th, and it starts at 12:30. I think I said 3 p.m. It starts at 12:30. You can get more information about the tour, again, on my book site.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For Living in Baltimore, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank our guest, Ms. Maricela Gomez, who's author of Race, Class, Power, and Organizing in East Baltimore, for being our guest today. Thank you, Maricela.
Thank you.
Keep up your good work for all of us.
Oh, we're trying.
And for Living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.